Kia ora koutou whānau. Welcome to Read With Me. This is a podcast. We read a book and then we talk about it. My name is Rachel. I'm here with...
Minray.
Hi, Minray.
Kia ora whānau.
You having a good week?
Kind of.
Okay, never mind. Move right past. That is not that kind of podcast.
Okay,
so this week we both read Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Yes.
I'm going to read the Wikipedia paragraph because it's the easiest way to tell you about it.
Yes.
It's an 1865 novel by English author Lewis Carroll, pseudonym Charles Dodgson. It tells of a young girl named Alice who falls through a rabbit hole into a subterranean fantasy world populated by peculiar anthropomorphic creatures. It is considered to be one of the best examples of the literary nonsense genre, plays with logic, giving the story lasting popularity with adults as well as with children.
Wow, Rachel, that was an amazing summary. I thought that you wrote it by yourself.
Shut up. Okay, so there was a sequel for this as well called Through Looking Glass in 1871.
One by Disney and one by Tim Burton, right? Was it two by Tim Burton?
Why are you interrupting me on my bit? So there's the 1951 Disney animated, which most people know. Yes. Have you seen it?
I haven't actually seen any versions, like, as a whole, but I just remember it being super creepy and I gave up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've seen bits and pieces of the animated, but I also have not seen the whole thing.
I was just not interested at all. Maybe I was grown up a little bit. Yeah, or maybe I've seen, like, different versions and I... kind of feel like the story is a bit old.
and then we go if we can read it as 30-year-olds. There is also the other two most known adaptations are the Tim Burton films in 2010, 2016 live adaptation. They're both trash, don't worry about it.
Yep, don't worry.
I haven't even seen the sequel, but I think it's still trash. So can you tell us some facts about Lewis Carroll?
So basically what I think is one of the most interesting things about Lewis Carroll himself is how he was super talented in mathematics, and he was really obsessed with, like, logic and figuring out puzzles and things like geometry, and he invented, like, a lot of puzzles that you would make with, like, wood and, like, iron and stuff like that. So I thought that was really one of his biggest inspirations that he drew.
It comes out a lot in the books, doesn't it?
Yeah, like the reverse logic and, you know, the whole mechanics of the story itself, and you know, card games, and I thought that was really cool, and you can see that a lot in, like, Harry Potter and other British works as well. Yeah. And also one of the most interesting things was the way that the story was created. So he invented the plot about Alice, and he told the story to this girl who was called Alice as well, called Alice Liddell. I think it's either Liddell or Liddell.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually begged him to write it all down, which is how he managed to get the handwritten manuscript. And he also illustrated it himself in the beginning, but of course, that when he published that, it was illustrated by John Tenniel. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you like to give a little bit more background on Carroll himself as well, or you want to pass?
Okay, now I'll talk about this bit. So, some people know, or some people don't know, that there is some controversy, I guess, is one nice way to put it, about Lewis's past and his relationship with Alice Liddell and some other young women in particular. This is a very deep topic that we don't really want to get into too much, but
it's
I think it's
difficult.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic to talk about, especially in from two people who don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's, I think it's something that you have to mention because it's a reality of his life and it has an impact on how we see his work and how I personally see his work, and the context in which you might read the book. But anyway, so again, just reading straight from Wikipedia, I encourage anyone who wants to know more to actually read into it more. There's a lot of writing around it. There's a lot of different sides to it, and I'll give my personal opinion after this because I have very strong feelings about it.
Go ahead,
anyway, Rachel. Straight from Wikipedia, some late 20th century biographers have suggested that Dodgen's interest in children had an erotic element. Essentially, he spent a lot of time around these young girls. He photographed them naked at times. A bunch of other things. There's sort of an argument that in the Victoria era, this was fine. It was all innocent. Children were bastions of purity and beauty and we're allowed to be gross about them.
I guess they were like sort of viewed as these innocent and pure beings, like this holy kind of, but those were paintings and those were considered normal and common.
Yeah.
But I guess the photography it was a fairly new activity to photograph you know, a certain time and place.
So, yeah, so there's that one side of it that it was all innocent. That's what they did back then. And then there is obviously the other side of it where it seems like he's a bit of a pedo and it's really gross. And, you know, and it's something we'll never know for 100% because it was in the past, but there are definite readings of the situation. There's a lot of people who have talked about it and researched it in a lot more depth than we can or will because it's not how we roll. But, I mean, for myself, I think there's a tendency to softball issues like this and try to put them in a better light than...
And that is
probably the reality.
I guess that's the more problematic side of, like, sort of watering down an actual issue that we can potentially look into as a society. But I guess... you know, there's also the side of, hey, maybe, just maybe, the truth is somewhere in between. And it's hard to say,
It is hard to say. Personally, I come down on the harder side where I probably think he was...
strongly disagree.
I think it's so easy to romanticize people who are famous, who have done great artworks. I think evidence very much points to him... being inappropriate is a nice way to say it with these girls, and I think it's gross, and I don't like it. This is a completely unresearched opinion, kind of. I've looked into it a little bit, but yeah, I think too often we say, oh no, you know, it was the time, or blah, blah, blah. It's still, at least it's a dude taking photos of little girls, and it's, you know, it's,
I guess
it's
the reputation of him really changes throughout history, and but I think still most people probably still views him as, you know, the great author of a really great piece of work, a highly esteemed work that is so representative of Britain, and you know that's where things become, you know, quite muddled.
It's not an easy issue to talk about,
but we'll talk about more about the
relationship
between the author and the work.
It's something definitely that came up for me when reading this book. Anyway, so that is there. I encourage everyone to probably be a bit more diligent in the research of it than we were.
Thanks but, for that reminder, Rachel.
But you know, I also don't think it's ever right that we don't mention these things just because they're a bit difficult, because it's a it's a fact of what the time was. So
cool. How do you feel about the language that's presented in this book?
See, that's one of the reasons why I love it, because I love me a good pun. I laughed out loud a couple of times, like, in public reading this book.
No, I was
like,
in the library.
See, this is the thing I noticed. No, I think because I had the impression of the animated movie where there's a plot to it, you know, she goes, there's something she does. The book, there's no plot to the book. The book is a story of meeting crazy characters. And it's very pun-based. It's like the whole thing is a pun.
Would you say that those puns stand out to you as an adult or even to children?
I think as a kid, I think some of them would have. But definitely, Yeah, I think a lot of them would have been lost to me.
You wouldn't have picked up, like...
But I think the like, ridiculous joking nature would have stood up to me, but not... So this is the Mock Turtle's story. This is the Mock Turtle speaking. He goes, "The master was an old turtle. We used to call him Tortoise." "Why'd you call him Tortoise if he wasn't one?" asked Alice. "We called him Tortoise because he taught us," said the Mock Turtle angrily. "Really, you are very dull." Like, I cracked up at that.
Like I swear, if I told a joke that's similar to my friends, they would just look at me in horror. Funny. You know, everyone talks about the wordplay and then actually reading it for the first time. It, it intrigued me how actually deeply it runs throughout the whole... Like, every single aspect of the book calls directly to this kind of non-logic kind of theme. And that's what I appreciated about it. And I thought that was, you know, it was a genius kind of craft of work. But for me, what stood out was how this is distinctly British and in the sense that... you know, I mean, the English language, for just talking about the English language by itself, it's layers of meaning, you know, and how sort of Alice, not Alice, how Lewis Carroll kind of presents that in a really simplistic way. And so it's almost like a social commentary on the culture of like politeness and like etiquette.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
And I sort of compare this with Pride and Prejudice, where, you know, these characters, they have to be constantly conscious and aware of what they're saying so that it's like it meets the social standards of what is acceptable and what is not. But in Alice, it's all about rule breaking, and I think that's really fascinating. Yeah,
that is really interesting. Yeah, I didn't read that into the book, but I like that.
That's good.
I wanted to go into my first question that I have from reading the book of the separation of art and artist. So let's say, well, this is what I think anyway, that Lewis Carroll is a very problematic, gross dude. Like, does that affect how you enjoy? Do you think you can still enjoy the book knowing that the creator is so problematic?
Yeah.
And this is something that comes up so much more nowadays when all our faves are problematic. I have very strong feelings about that, but what do you think?
That's a really important question. And obviously the most sensible thing to do is not to support artists who are you know, doing things that are illegal or doing things that goes against my own morality. But
you really, really like the piece of art? You spent $300 on it.
That would not happen.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be sort of that obsessed with artwork to the point that, you know,
Yeah, so for me, there's a book. Orson Scott Card wrote Ender's Game.
Yes.
And I read it when I was quite young. It's one of my, like, formative science fiction books that sort of... informed my love of science fiction. But come to nowadays, Orson Scott Card has been revealed to be kind of a piece of trash. He's homophobic, sort of very he's not a great guy, and I don't know how to navigate something that is so dear to me from I think one of the things I have decided is not to buy anything new, like to do nothing that will financially profit him in any way anymore. But I still own the book. I still really, you know, it had such an effect on me as a young person. This is not a question I think that has an answer,
I think to sort of wrap it up, I do think that there is, a personal choice.
Yeah.
And that we need to sort of be reminded that no one is, as harmful as the things that they have done have been, you know, it's important to think about, like, the graceful kind of aspects and to separate the artist from the work.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm asking. You think we should...
To a certain degree.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, the work itself doesn't necessarily represent the author entirely.
That's true. And, yeah, that's an interesting way to think of it.
And although there is, like, you know, like a direct relationship between the work and the artist. It's also fair to say that because the artist's work is like a tangible object, while the artist himself is a human person who have developed endless kind of capacities for change and like emotions and and these are really complex sort of human characteristics, so it's important to make that distinction.
Was very wise, Anne Rae. I think I tend to come down on more, because so many people who do so many bad things get away with it. I think I tend to come more down on sort of like the almost cancel culture, not quite, but it's so difficult. People suck. And it sucks that people who suck sometimes make really good work.
I think that was an even wiser conclusion to that, Rachel. Who do you think, or which characters stood out to you the most in Atlas?
I mean, Cheshire Cat, obviously.
Really?
Yes.
Me three.
Okay, listen, this is one of the main things I wrote down reading this book again, is that everyone in here sucks. Like, everyone is mean and unhelpful and rude and has no idea what's going on.
Can I just ask
why,
I mean, you probably can't be bothered answering this question anyway, but why do you think that they are mean? Or what are your, like, sort of theories on that?
I wonder if it's partly it's just a funny way to write a story. You know, when you're a kid and like when you're a kid, if you're telling a story to a kid, you make ridiculous characters for them to laugh at.
So that it's, you think it's kind of part of the theme of like reverse logic, and it helps with like building a world that is super unfamiliar.
It's just a bit silly.
What did you think of Alice herself?
She's the worst.
Really?
She's the worst.
Really?
Okay, so there's this little girl. She's in a completely unfamiliar world. Mm-hmm. And she just fucks shit up.
I'm a little
And then, but then she blames everyone else for the fact that she gets in trouble. Okay, so I've got...
So you want to give us like...
Yeah, I'm going to give you
a little example.
So the bit where she goes into the rabbit's house, right? And then eats something of his without permission. And then grows really big. And then they're freaking out about it, and they're going to try and smoke her out, and she's like, don't you dare. So the passage here is,
so you think that that's like kind of not so well,
so she drew her foot as far down the chimney as she could and waited till she heard a little animal scratching and scrambling above in the chimney close above, then saying to herself, this is Bill, she gave one sharp kick and waited to see what would happen. So she's messing up this person's house because she was somewhere she shouldn't be, messing with stuff she shouldn't be. And then they're trying to get her out. And then she physically assaults someone. She just kicks this lizard into the next week.
That's super interesting because I guess, well, Alice presents herself as like, well, she talks about herself as like a really good girl. And or maybe the narrator does like that.
The demure little...
Yeah, like Alice, she's like
typical English schoolgirl.
Yeah, good girl. It's always like, oh, she's good natured.
Yeah, and she's super cantankerous. She's really rude. She gets offended really easily, and she always messes with things that she shouldn't be messing with, and then gets mad when she gets in trouble for it.
You see, that's the kind of impression that I had of her before I read the book. Because there's so many layers to like liking characters, because you sometimes like a character because you can relate to them, they're like reflective of you, or you really I guess see them as well crafted but not necessarily like them.
Okay, this is gonna be a deep read on it, but it feels very much like the British's view of colonizing other countries, because they just go in, fuck everything up, ignore like how the world is already working, and then get mad when there are consequences for it.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know, that was my deep read of it.
Whoa, okay, never mind.
Not to make it too heavy.
Yeah, this is not like, this is politically friendly, guys.
No, it's not. What are you talking about?
Okay, all right.
This is my completely unsubstantiated deep read of it.
But what about the other characters besides Cheshire Cat himself that you think, you know, are their actions justified? Or do you think that's just, you know, the whole world designed to be...
But it's like their actions are strange and they're also rude, but it's like it's their world. They have every right to be where they are, whereas Alex is constantly walking into these situations that, like, a good example is the Mad Hatter and the March Hare. Because she just goes and sits down at the table and they're like, we didn't invite you. And, you know, that's very right. And then she's in this very weird situation, but she had no right to be there in the first place.
What stood out to me was, like, how, I can't remember who, but I think the Caterpillar. Said,
the Caterpillar is one of my favourite characters as well.
Mine as well. Like, how he was saying how everyone in this world is mad.
Yeah, exactly.
And that just made me kind of rethink my approach in reading the book, mm-hmm. because
in what way
I guess I you know I was thinking, you know, it's reverse logic, but also it's not, you know, it's about being mad, but what counts as being mad has always been the question when I was reading the book.
A very good point. Who would you recommend this book to? If anyone.
No one that I know. No one that I know.
Is it because of the book? See, this is for me. So I actually do like the book. I love nonsense. So I read this book when I was, I don't know, maybe 9. Maybe that's too young. Maybe 9, 10, 11, 12. 19. I don't know. Yeah. One of those. And I love nonsense. Like, I thought it was great. I thought it was brilliant. And then I read it again now, and I still, like, I have more problems with Alice as a character than now.
So you have more problems with, like, the whole background of, like, the author. Yeah,
see, I, like, if I didn't know the background of the author, I think I would recommend this to young people. Because it's just fun, and it's dumb.
I think part of that also.
But, yeah, now I just, I don't know if I would, and it's hard because it is a classic, you know, it's in our lexicon of literature as a...
No, that's the more funny thing, because if it's so esteemed, like highly esteemed as a classic, I don't think we would do much in, you like, the promotion of, you like, don't the need book.
To, but I mean, it's still, like, it's still an old, like, I, you know, it's
who would
like...
If I start teaching one day and, like, you know, if we were to read books to our class, I would not read this book.
I think I wouldn't, because I'd try and find something a bit more diverse. You know, not mine.
Yeah, there's a lot more that has come out after
this. Or even in that bit, you know, like I recommend Pride and Prejudice over this.
Yeah, I would happily show my kids, like, I mean, in class, the illustration, because I think they're gorgeous. However, they're better stories.
That's the thing. I do like it, and I would, maybe I'd find something similar to this, like nonsense fiction that
like
isn't
card games.
So problematic.
You know, cards.
Sorry.
Like card games.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think that the, you know, the whole idea of using the 52 cards to make games, and you know, to build like towers and stuff. Yeah. I think that's really, you know, magic, that's really cool.
Yeah. What does that have to do with the book? What are you talking about?
No, because, you know, Alice is like Alice of Queen of Hearts, you know? Yeah. Yeah, like that.
What is...
No, because the cards stood out to me the most.
Oh, so you wouldn't recommend the book, but you'd recommend card games.
Yeah.
Based on the book.
No, not based on the book, but like
just in general.
I think like...
You really hate instead of reading this book, let's play some cards.
No, like... I mean, okay, so this
that's
is...
a reach.
Yeah. Okay, next.
So do you know much about the illustrations around this work? Can you tell me more about that?
Oh, yeah. So I've seen some of the original illustrations by Lewis Carroll himself. And there was this illustration of a girl with a really, really tall neck. And that creeped me out. And
I think that was in the version I read. Because obviously we would associate a lot of the vigils with the movie. But I actually, one of the things I found really surprising was how a lot of the vigils are actually really different. Mm. Including, so the picture I'm looking at is this little girl in a really tall neck, and it's gross. But yeah. It was surprising to me how different the visuals are compared to the animated version.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like,
Picture Minoru showing me is just a neck. It looks like
a
girl's head on top of a tree trunk.
It's really interesting.
So that's one of Lewis Carroll's.
Yeah, his own early illustration. He drew on his own manuscript, and he later got this guy called, I think, Sir John Tenney. I can't remember. But he did the official illustrations for the publication of the book, and there were later versions.
John Tenniel.
Tenniel, right.
Do you think the illustrations like helped with the popularity of the book?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Why do you... So, Minoru is a illustrator? Drawer?
I am a drawer.
Yeah. So, do you... Like, when you look at something like this and you see these illustrations, does that say something to you?
Oh, yeah. I think that there's this kind of special, Zeitgeist? Kind of feel of these illustrations being... kind of capsules in a specific time.
That's cool.
And when I saw these, it's like, not only are they so super consistent with each other, but also they speak to the deep kind of culture that runs in Britain.
That's really cool.
And
can you explain what you mean by that?
I guess, you know, with the rabbit, you know, and the card playing and all that, the queen and the chess, those were, I guess... You can even associate that with, like, Harry Potter books as well. There's
that's
a lot
true.
Of these magical elements. Yeah.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to ask, do you think there is a deeper metaphorical meaning to the book, or was it just written as an entertaining children's book? So we're talking about a little bit, like, some of my deep reads into the book, which I don't think were intentional.
Well, you've answered your own question.
But when you were reading it, were you going, oh, yeah, the Cheshire Cat means this or...
That's a good point, because I'm at this point where I feel like any reading has
value.
To a certain degree, because, I mean, they're on different degrees, but the most sort of oversimplified version would be the fact that our world is so complex that there's hardly any measurement to indicate the degree of madness. And maybe what Lewis wanted to say was that there probably is no logic that is logical. You know, what counts as logical? And it was sort of, you can tap into like the social kind of structure of the world and how it's, you know, it's contradicting itself. So I see it more as like a paradox.
That it's super interesting, because I did while I was reading this time through as an adult, I was like, nah, there's no, I was like, oh, these people keep thinking there's a deeper meaning to it, but it's obviously just a children's story. So I had the exact opposite reaction to you, where I was like, people just think they're so clever and there's a lot of But then I looked up the book, and so there is a lot of meaning to different things in the book.
Do you mean, like, symbols?
Yeah, symbolism. So, just reading from Wikipedia, I haven't looked into this any further.
Nice.
So Martin Gardner, along with other scholars, have shown the book to be filled with many parodies of Victorian popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the book's adventures may have been based or influenced by people, situation, buildings in Oxford and Christchurch. For example, the rabbit hole symbolised the actual stairs at the back of the Christchurch's main hall. A carving of a griffin and rabbit seen in Ripon Cathedral, where Carol's father was canon, may have provided inspiration for the tale. So essentially, and there's a bit about the red roses symbolise the English House of Lancaster, while the white roses symbolise the rival House of York.
Yeah, so you see there's so many like British...
Exactly.
Yeah, like cultural...
But not even British, like specifically to this era, to his town.
Yeah, and his family.
Yeah, I don't know, I just found it fascinating that... it said something about simply the... Just how much is lost because it's in a different time. I just thought that was
fascinating. You remind me of how you can't make something out of thin air. So everything that was in the book was from a place.
Yeah,
and it
exactly.
wasn't like just, you know, his head was just magically full of these ideas. It was constantly built up and he was constantly sort of influenced by his surroundings.
And so much of it's just... it's just lost because we don't know. I don't know. I don't have any deeper meaning to that, but...
But then
just fascinating that there is this whole other layer that I'll never understand because I'm not going to look into it anymore. But, you know.
The important thing is, like, I don't even think that the author himself knows.
I think so. I think it sounds like a lot of the symbol was... intentionally put in there.
Yeah, no, not like the more kind of obvious ones. It's more to do with how he created this, you know, large piece of work, and like overall, there are so many meaning that maybe pick up himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's when the work becomes even bigger than the author, and I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, that's the fascinating thing about art, and I guess that comes back to like the. The divide between artist and art, because kind of what you were saying before, the art does separate itself from an art from the artist after
a while.
It
really lives on to have its own
life. Yeah, but then I'm always like, well, he's still a piece of shit, though. You know, it's so difficult. It's, I don't know. Hopefully one day we live in a society where people aren't so big shit, so we don't have to stop liking our favourite books because we find out they're written by douchebags. But that's just wishful thinking.
Lovely, lovely. So that is comes to the end of our podcast. Thank you all for listening. Any additional words, Rachel?
Follow us on Instagram that we don't have, Twitter that we don't have,
Facebook,
sign up to our Patreon that we don't have. Is fun. We will have another podcast out eventually. We don't know what we're reading yet, but I am angling for a science fiction book.
So please keep listening so that we can do this more consistently and often. Thank you. Kia ora.
Ka kite.